Plus, at half off. That's 50% off retail price only for my listeners. Call toll-free 855-870-6622, 855-870-6622. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm KFC's Extra Crispy Colonel, and you're the extra busy regular person who has to make dinner for a family of four. But you can shirk that responsibility because my Extra Crispy $20 fill-up from KFC contains 8 pieces of freshly double-breaded Extra Crispy Chicken, 4 biscuits, 2 orders of mashed potatoes, and a side of coleslaw for just $20. That'll feed them. KFC, it's extra crispy good.
Pricing and participation may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
The 38 individuals charged participated in the trafficking of hundreds of impoverished women from Bangkok, Thailand, to cities throughout the United States.
U.S. Attorney Greg Brooker in Minneapolis announcing the dismantling of a human trafficking organization.
This organization created an elaborate web of criminal activity where the members were making tens of millions of dollars by exploiting these vulnerable women who were promised a better life in the United States, where they were told that they would be able to support their families back home in Thailand.
The women who have been rescued now receiving very critical medical treatment. The Stanley Cup Finals have been set. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the Nashville Predators are going to be skating off against each other. Game 1 takes place on Monday. Pittsburgh advanced last night with a 3-2 double overtime win over the Ottawa Senators in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. USA Radio News.
The savings keep stacking up at Lumber Liquidators' Summer Stackout Sale. Choose from the best selection of Woodlook waterproof flooring, like a Vela Woodlook tile. It's an extra 20% off with coupon. All Dream Home X2O water-resistant laminate is on sale. Get pre-finished hardwood from $149, including $1 off per square foot on Velawood. Plus, overstock, small lots, and more from just 59 cents at your local store. And special financing. Hurry, stack up the savings at Lumber Liquidators today.
AAA says more people on the road this Memorial Day weekend. Here's Mark Woolsey.
Tamara Johnson with AAA says they project more than 39 million people will travel 50 miles or more this weekend. Most, they say, will be driving. It's expected to be the busiest Memorial Day weekend since 2005, with about a million more people traveling this year than last. Johnson says they're attributing the spike to an uptick in the economy. She says people have more money in their pockets and are more willing to spend it on a trip. However, that means higher prices on things like gas. The average price for a gallon of gas is up about a dime from last year.
A Canadian family is thanking the NYPD for taking care of their mom who was struck in Times Square. Here's more on the story.
Elena Avetisian of Quebec has been in a coma at Bellevue since the tragedy, her husband and sister by her side. Now they've written a letter thanking the NYPD and the city for its help in making that happen. The 38-year-old woman in town for a family wedding was sightseeing with her three daughters when she was mowed down in Times Square. Avetisian's family has raised nearly $25,000 through GoFundMe to help cover expenses. Sarah Lee Kessler, New York.
Scientists say they've discovered a species of snake that hunts in groups. Scientists from the University of Tennessee found the Cuban boa uses teamwork to increase chances of catching prey. The study's author says he observed the snakes forming a fence in a cave passage to block the path of fruit bats. It's the first time reptiles have been found in coordinated hunting. USA Radio News.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Well, good afternoon. It's Friday. Wow, another Friday. And Memorial Day weekend. I understand that people are trying to leave early, and 78 westbound is jammed. Not too unusual, but I'm sure many people are thinking they could get home earlier today. Well, Since it is Memorial Day weekend, what do we have in the way of weather? Not the greatest weather. If you're going to do something outside, and I hope everybody will have time to do that, tomorrow afternoon looks like it's going to be the best, actually, probably since there's only a slight chance of showers after 3 p.m., start a little early. We could see some patchy fog before 8 a.m. in the morning, but otherwise there will be increasing clouds, high of about 74 degrees. Tomorrow night, there is again a slight chance of showers. And Sunday, a high of about 79 degrees, but again, there's a 30% chance of showers on Sunday, and then showers are likely, or rain is likely, on Sunday night. So into Monday, I don't think, I don't know why I don't have that, but I don't seem to. Let's see what's happening on Monday. We should have that. For some reason, I will do that a little bit later because I am not seeing the forecast for Monday. And of course, that I can actually tell you a little bit about it. There are supposed to be showers on Monday before 9 a.m., then scattered showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., high of about 73, but the chance of rain is about 60% on Monday. And again, 40% on Monday night. But, of course, into the weekend, Tuesday partly sunny, high of about 78, and then Wednesday mostly sunny. So those of us who like weekends can't seem to win. And we'll be back with It's the Law as soon as we give you some information about our sponsors.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smith, the program It's the Law, And we'll be talking today about some cases. Actually, there are a few interesting cases that I think people should be concerned about. And even if you are not aware of the fact that, you know, you could be involved in a case even though you don't want to be, but of course that is certainly true. And once again, of course, we've heard that the New Jersey courts are courts of equity, and that is something we should all remember. And the family part, meaning the part that deals with all of the family matters, certainly is a court of equity, and the legislature has recognized that courts' equitable powers are particularly appropriate in the context of domestic relations. Therefore, the trial courts must exercise their inherent equitable jurisdiction and decide the case based on equitable considerations. So that there was a case where someone exercised his rights to the marital estate before the law firm representing one of the parties recorded its judgment. And therefore, the law firm that recorded its judgment against one of its clients was aware of the interest in equitable distribution of the marital property, meaning the third party's interest it's the plaintiff's interest in marital property, even before the entry of the final judgment of divorce. So what the court found is that although the Liz pendants against the property was perhaps, not perhaps, they found that it was improperly filed. However, the Liz pendants served as additional notice to all people who might be interested in the marital property that the plaintiff had a prior claim on it. And therefore, the court said that equities cannot countenance a disregard of the factual events and preclude equitable distribution, despite the fact that the law firm proceeded properly under the law. And so in this case, the court said the doctrine of Liz Pendens prevents the obstruction of the administration of justice and the derogation of one's potential rights to property. And so filing a notice of Liz Pendens serves as constructive notice to the world that an action involving real property is pending, so that any subsequent purchaser or lien holder of the property will take subject to that litigation. So this is very important, and certainly, this is why people need attorneys. They need attorneys who know what they're doing so things can be done properly. So in this case, the plaintiff was provided with what he was supposed to receive. And that is, in this case, the plaintiff was the former husband, and the parties agreed that the wife could remain in the marital residence for 3 years if she chose for the benefit of herself and the children. However, when the property was sold, there was not enough to satisfy both the husband's share of equitable distribution and the law firm's judgment against its client. And so in this case, the law firm, according to this decision, the law firm had notice and should have realized that there was notice out of Liz Pendens. Now, of course, they had argued that the Liz Pendens was illegal and did not establish the priority of rights over the law firm's right as a holder of a judgment lien. I think, frankly, some people will be surprised about this, but it does show, and this is why it's so important to have a good title company if you're purchasing property, because you're held to know about all judgments and any Liz Pendens. And if there is a Liz Pendens against a property, you are really at peril if you proceed without having your attorney find out exactly why the Liz Pendens was filed and whether or not it's valid and whether or not you have to do something to get rid of it. But this case shows that in this case, the law firm had notice of the Liz Pendens, and so they were subject to that prior claim. Now, that's an interesting warning, and frankly, I sometimes wonder why people don't consult attorneys when they have questions like this. And certainly, my friend Rich Reynolds at Cortez and Hay would be able to show someone that the jeopardy, if they try to purchase a property when there's a pending Liz Pendens in case of a lawsuit. Now, there are ways to get rid of a Liz Pendens, of course, if it's improper, but you can't just ignore it. So what else is happening? Well, there was the case Clapper v. Clapper, and this was, I'm talking about family part cases for the first part today. And this was an appeal, and these are appeals. The prior case was also an appeal. And in this case, the husband appealed from provisions of an order denying his application to emancipate the party's 21-year-old son and certain other things. Now, he argued that the evidence was insufficient to support the order, and he said it was insufficient without certain factors being reviewed. And we have a case in New Jersey, Newberg versus Arrigo, and there are factors with respect to parents' obligation to provide education post high school to children and support. So in this case, the court reversed the trial judge and remanded for a hearing, finding that the issues surrounding whether the child has been emancipated require extensive fact-finding when there were competing affidavits. So in this case, there were competing affidavits. The appellate division said that the family part judge should have had a plenary hearing, and because there was no way to resolve the discrepancies, just because the attorneys had oral argument, or the parties. I believe, I'm not sure who represented them in connection with the trial oral argument. Also, of course, they said that the family part judge failed to enumerate the Newberg factors when setting forth the qualifications of emancipation and their children's or child's needs, interests, and independent resources. Now, there has been a statutory change that puts a burden on the custodial parent to prove that a child who is age 19, is still unemancipated. And then that new statute, fairly new statute, enacted this year, also requires the probation departments to close out all accounts when a child is age 23. And this has created big problems because when the legislature enacted the statute, I'm not sure that they understood the ramifications. There are many parents who are paying what we call child support, or at least support for their children, because the child is unemancipated due to not only injury, but usually due to disability. And so the parent is, in fact, required to pay child support and continue to pay child support. That has now, because of the statute, and the statute was enacted because the probation departments did not want to show child support forever. In other words, what was happening when there was child support and the payments were not made, the probation department kept the accounts open. So some quote-unquote children were in their 30s, and there had been no support received through the probation department for 10 or 15 years. probably because everybody realized that they were emancipated. However, because these arrears were on the probation records, this impacted negatively on New Jersey getting money from the federal government. In other words, they look at the money collected by probation departments in allocating funds to New Jersey and to other states. Of course, the fallacy there is high-income earners who are paying a lot of child support or alimony through probation would pay it anyway. So it's the few workers, and we have a lot fewer workers, are now, you know, working on just to keep everything moving. They're involved and have cases where people would always pay support in any event. But what this does is gives the judges more work by saying that they have to have a hearing in all cases where there are disputed certifications. And, of course, it would have to be consistent with the law. And usually, because the courts are so busy, these are really back-burnered. I know that one of the problems is if someone is going in to try to get a reduction in alimony, not a reduction, I should say a termination, because of their age or some other legitimate reason. Because it takes the court so long to reach these hearings, it's not unusual for the person to still be paying 6 months or even a year or more later. So that, and of course, there's no incentive for the person getting alimony to settle, because they're going to get the alimony as long as there is, you know, the case open and it hasn't been decided. Now, there's some good news as far as New Jersey, and not good news as from J&J, and this is a subsidiary of J&J McNeil PPC. They've agreed to pay 42 states $33 million to settle claims that it distributed contaminated over-the-counter drugs and unlawfully promoted those products. And so out of that $33 million, New Jersey is going to get $1.04 million. So they're actually getting certainly more than many of the states are getting. And so this wasn't divided, the 42 states, you know, New Jersey is getting more than, or I shouldn't say more than its fair share, but more than its share if you divided the settlement by the number of states. There is another case where the a defendant, and this is really important, anyone who's charged with domestic violence needs to understand the repercussions of that. It can be very, very significant, both personally, of course, and in connection with your job or in connection with licenses or even, for example, DCPMP, when they're looking to place children with relatives. They have to look to make sure that there's no final restraining orders and know that the person that they're placing with has not been found guilty of abuse or neglect in the past. And sometimes these cases go back, you know, 20 years. But in this case, in 1996, a family judge entered mutual final restraining orders against the parties based on their history of domestic violence. Now, in 1996, judges did that. They no longer do that. They will find one person guilty, and I have not seen any judge finding two people guilty of domestic violence. In any event, the parties did not divorce until the final restraining order was 1996. They didn't divorce. They divorced subsequently. But in 2015, The defendant moved to dismiss the final restraining order against her. And she argued that it was preventing her from seeking employment in the bail bonds business. So, you know, there's certain businesses that if you're convicted, including domestic violence, you're not going to be able to work in that business. And it also apparently, according to her, prevented her from establishing a relationship with her grandchildren. So in this case, the plaintiff said he was still afraid of her and believed she would use a firearm to harm him and his current wife. Now, the trial judge denied the former wife's motion the trial judge denied the plaintiff's motion and did so based on the strong, angry tenor of the papers submitted to the court and also the woman's hostility towards her former husband. The trial judge found that the former husband's fear of the defendant, meaning his former wife, was credible, and that the parties still harbored a lot of anger towards each other. So the appellate court found that the trial judge properly considered the factors and determined that animosity still existed between the parties and that the plaintiff was still fearful of the defendant, and that because the findings of the judge were amply supported by the record, they affirmed the trial judge. In other words, they said, yes, the trial judge made the correct decision in this case. But what it does or should trigger in people is domestic violence, a final restraining order, has repercussions and probably will have some repercussions against everybody who has a final restraining order entered against them. And not just, you know, some people, and I've heard this, say, well, I don't care. I don't want to see her again anyway. Well, but you're not thinking about what could happen as far as your job. Licenses, for example, could be a problem getting a certain license. I'm not talking about a driver's license, but a professional license, for example. And there may be other things that will create problems. Now, as I said, we talked about the Liz Pendence case. Now, neither of these cases were approved for publication, which means that although we attorneys use them as guidance, we cannot cite them as precedent in another case. Now, there was a case that the headlines might be rather controversial. And the headlines are that there's no automatic disbarment for child sex offenses. And this was the New Jersey Supreme Court. And, of course, since they deal with cases against attorneys, that's exactly what this was. These are three cases against attorneys and doing various things, which I'll talk about if you want to stay tuned until after the break.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by... Come join us for the 4th Annual Hunterdon County Community Day on Saturday, June 3rd from 11 to 4 at the County Fairgrounds, South County Park in Ringo's. There'll be food, there'll be music, there'll be games, fun for the whole family, pony rides and a petting zoo, reptile shows by Michael Schwedick, outdoor games and activities, a shred event sponsored by the Hunterdon County Clerk from 11 to 3, tethered balloon rides by Unity Bank. The 4th Annual Hunterdon County Community Day on Saturday, June 3rd, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the Board of Chosen Freeholders of Hunterdon County, Hunterdon Healthcare, Unity Bank, Jersey Mike's and Subs. For all the great details and information, visit HunterdonChamber.org or give us a call at 908-782-7115.
Hey, thanks, Chris, for reminding us about June 3rd, but he kind of skipped over, not really. He said there was a shredding event. What does this mean? This means clean out all of your papers, anything you want to discard in the way of papers, old checks, old tax returns, although I think people should always keep their tax returns, but you may have paper tax returns and still have them on a disk. So anything, receipts, anything with your social security number, anything with bank numbers, really that information, those documents should be shredded. And, you know, kind of ripping them up and throwing them in the garbage is not enough. But what we're going to have at the community day is there'll be a shredding event from 11 until 3. Well, what does this mean? Well, it means you can bring your plastic bags full of paper that you want shredded, boxes. It's done by SureShred. They do a great job. In fact, I think they probably will be able to give you a receipt if you need it. And that is 11 to 3. It's no charge. And most other places charge, or, you know, you're trying to put things through your own little shredder. May or may not work. You might not need this. But if you have any amount of shredding any documents, you now have time over the Memorial Day holiday to go through them and, you know, get them all ready for the shredding. And Debbie Lentini and her crew will be there. And, you know, you can spend a few minutes, get everything shred, and then go on to enjoy the rest of Community Day. But even if you don't plan on going to Community Day for anything else, I really suggest using the shredding because it's a great service to the, I guess I shouldn't say great, but it's a very good service, you know, that we have in Hunterdon County. And as you know, most of us don't have much else. I mean, we don't have, in most places, we don't have sewer, we don't have water, we don't have garbage pickup, which is a big thing, et cetera, et cetera. So think about that. And now I'm back to talk to you about a case that, you know, maybe you'll say, well, it's not interesting except for lawyers. But it really is, because I think, first of all, it's horrible. But secondly, it's the kind of thing that anyone who has any kind of a license or works in certain areas, certain areas of employment, or wants to work, or is concerned that employers will get an arrest record, etc., needs to listen to this. And this is, there are three attorneys that were involved in this, and our New Jersey Supreme Court considered the discipline to be imposed on the three attorneys. Now, none of them had a previous disciplinary history. So that's important because there are some repeat offenders that go up and they've had disciplinary situations where they've been suspended or admonished, and you know, the court will be a lot less lenient in those cases. However, in this case, all three pled guilty to sex offenses in which their intended victims were children. And these children were ranging in ages from 9 to 12. There is absolutely no justification for anyone committing sex offenses with children. There's no justification in any event. However, when you're looking at children, this can damage them for the rest of their lives. So in any event, we have a court rule, under that court rule, the respondents, the three attorneys' convictions constitute conclusive evidence of their criminal conduct, as well as violation of the Rule of Professional Conduct 8.4 paren B and paren. And that rule prescribes commission of a criminal act that reflects adversely on the lawyer's honesty, trustworthiness, or fitness as a lawyer. So they usually can find almost anything will fit that. But if there is some kind of criminal activity that doesn't, then it would not be a breach of that professional rule of professional conduct 8.4. So the only task before the Supreme Court in this case was to determine the appropriate discipline for each respondent's ethical violations. So, of course, the the Supreme Court, was not trying these people. It was just dealing with the ethical violations. The Superior Court would be the one handling any trials. So what happened here is the Office of Attorney Ethics, the OAE, and the Disciplinary Review Board, the DRB, recommended that the court disbar each respondent. So the recommendation was disbarment. Well, what does that mean in New Jersey? In New Jersey, it means that you will never be able to practice law again. In other words, a suspension is going to be the attorney can't practice for a certain period of time, or it can be an indefinite suspension. But it does give the attorney an opportunity to come back to practice at some point. So in this case, did the Supreme Court follow the DRB's recommendation to disbar? Well, this is what they did. These were the criminal acts. There are two what we call respondents. One's name was Mark Legato, and the other was Reagan Kenyon. And each of them pled guilty to third-degree attempted endangering the welfare of a child. So Legato admitted that he engaged in explicit online conversations with a person he believed to be a 12-year-old girl. And he also admitted scheduling two in-person meetings with the girl, but he did not appear for either one of them. Now, of course, unbeknownst to Legato, the alleged 12-year-old girl was actually an undercover law enforcement officer. So what happened is after he entered a guilty plea, the Office of Administrative Ethics filed a motion for final discipline before the DRB. So now, in their unanimous decision, the DRB, Disciplinary Review Board, which is made up of attorneys and civilians, voted for Legato. They voted for his, unanimously, they voted for his disbarment. Now, respondent Kenyon admitted that over the course of approximately 4 months, he engaged in online conversations with a person he believed to be a 14-year-old girl. He also sent her images of and links to hardcore adult pornography. and arranged to meet the girl, but he did not appear at the meeting. Now, he was unaware that he was, in fact, communicating with an undercover law enforcement officer, and he maintains that his conduct was a result of his addiction to pornography. And he said he had begun treatment 6 days after his arrest. So it appears that, the majority decision at the DRB voted to disbar Kenyon. Three members dissented, recommending instead an indeterminate suspension Three recommended an indeterminate suspension, and then in a separate dissent, one member recommended a 1-year suspension from the practice of law. So the third person, Mr. Walter, pled guilty to third degree endangering the welfare of a child. He admitted during his plea colloquy that a member of the multiple occasions over the span of almost a year and a half, he masturbated in the presence of a 9-year-old girl who moved into his home with her mother. Wow, this is not totally unusual that a sexual predator will actually be living with the mother or have some relationship with the mother so he can get access to the girls readily. So in this case, Mr. Walter admitted that he masturbated in front of the girl and that he did so for his own sexual pleasure while they were alone in the family swimming pool. And then following a review of the matter submitted on motion for discipline filed by the OAE, several members of the DRB recommended Walter's disbarment. Two members dissented and one recommended an indeterminate suspension. And one recommended a 2-year suspension. So obviously everyone was all over the place as to what they thought the discipline should be in that case. The court, it went up to the Supreme Court, and the court imposed indeterminate suspension from the practice of law pursuant to Rule 1:20-15. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about this after I bring you some news from our sponsors.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, back talking some more about this most recent case. Of course, the Supreme Court also discussed other cases. There was a case involving an attorney who possessed and viewed child pornography on a state computer, and the court imposed an indeterminate suspension and, however, put the bar on notice that such offenses in the future might result in disbarment. And so that was, that was certainly notice. And what they found in this case is that the depraved actions of Kenyon and Legato exceeded the misconduct in Cohen because they engaged not only in explicit sexual conversations with the children, with the individuals they believed to be young girls, but they also coached them to engage in sexual acts. Therefore, unlike the situation in Cohen, where he was possessed and viewed child porn, they were directly attempting to really corrupt the morals of minors. Of course, they didn't know they were minors, but that's not the issue here. It was that's what they were trying to do. There's no mistaking their intent. What their intent was is to deal with young girls. That's who they thought they were dealing with. In the third case with Walter, he pleaded guilty to third degree endangering the welfare of a child. As I said, he admitted during his plea that on multiple occasions for over about a year and a half, he masturbated in the presence of this 9-year-old girl. And in this case, the Disciplinary Review Board recommended Walter's disbarment. And as I said, two of the members dissented. One recommended an indeterminate suspension, and one recommended a 2-year suspension. So what the Supreme Court did is that for the first two, Legato and Kenyon, the Supreme Court imposed an indeterminate suspension from the practice of law pursuant to Rule 1:20-15A, that's capital A, paren AN, paren, paren 2, and paren. Now, they actually disbarred Walter pursuant to the same rule, but at A1 rather than A2. And they noted in a rather long opinion, it was quite a long opinion, that in fact these respondents violated the rule. And of course, there's a recognition in New Jersey and in other states that the privilege to practice law is dependent on the attorney's ability to maintain a high moral character. And this is In re Hasbrock back in 1995. And a criminal conviction is evidence of guilt in a disciplinary proceeding and automatically establishes a violation of the rule of professional conduct. And as I said, that rule prohibits criminal conduct. And of course, the purpose, the primary purpose of discipline is not to punish the attorney, but to preserve the confidence of the public in attorneys. And that's what was noted in their holding in re Cohen, which was a New Jersey Supreme Court case in 2014. So that is really the Ethics Committee, of course, is in charge of ethics. The Disciplinary Review Board reviews all of these. But the Supreme Court and, frankly, all attorneys in New Jersey, you know, want to be sure that there is, in fact, attorneys maintain high moral standards. Now, what the court did in this case, because it was interesting that two of the respondents were indefinitely suspended and the third was disbarred. So the Supreme Court refrained from establishing a bright line rule requiring disbarment in all cases involving sexual offenses against children. So they found that rather than automatic disbarment, the appropriate level of discipline may depend on different factors, such as whether the case involved touching, physical violence, or actual dissemination of child pornography to others. There, you know, perhaps even the number of pictures or videos, or whether the perpetrator suffered from mental illness or from sexual abuse himself or herself. In other words, the court did recognize that sexual predators have often been victims of sexual abuse. And this is, you know, a big concern. Not that somebody who's been sexually abused can go out and sexually abuse other children, but it is one of the factors the court does want to consider. So as a result, they said imposition of discipline in cases involving sexual misconduct with a minor requires a fact-sensitive inquiry on a case-by-case basis, and which is another way of saying there's no way to know yes or no whether an attorney would be disbarred. And again, the same kind of disciplinary rules would apply to psychologists, to medical doctors, and probably almost anyone who has a license in some, you know, a license that there's a board that would in fact review allegations against that person who holds the license. So the Supreme Court also said that the public will be protected while the first two respondents are suspended and under parole supervision for at least 15 years. So in other words, these litigants were also, I shouldn't say litigants, they're called respondents in this type of proceeding, but they were litigants in criminal cases. They pleaded guilty and they were in fact sentenced. All of them were sentenced. And also, you know, they're suspended, they're under parole supervision, that would last for 15 years. They would not have access to internet for non-work purposes. Their internet usage will be monitored. And of course, there are the protections of the Megan's Law, and of course, parole supervision for life. So therefore, the Supreme Court stopped short of eliminating all hope for future reinstatement, although it is unlikely that they could successfully petition the court for readmission while under parole supervision for life. And of course, the Supreme Court said they did not minimize that the conduct was reprehensible, and you know, it was reprehensible even though it turned out that there were undercover police officers, not minors. That made it no less reprehensible, because the intent of these men was to do and say these things with children. So there was a dissent, and that was Justice Albin, and he expresses a view that the sexual exploitation or abuse of children, whether completed or as in the case of the first two respondents, because they attempted rather than did it with children. He felt it was such an egregious violation of societal norms that no discipline short of disbarment will ensure public confidence in the bar or the judiciary's governance of the bar. And when we talk about the bar, we talk about lawyers. And, of course, the same thing would happen with judges. So that that is the, that is a case, a serious case. And as I said, although it would not be the New Jersey Supreme Court in cases where someone is not admitted to the bar or a judge, it certainly other professions have to be concerned because their licensing boards, would have, I think in all cases, but maybe not in all cases, but certainly most boards would have the same power that the New Jersey Supreme Court has over judges and lawyers. So that, that wasn't very happy. There is another case that really should be, I'm not going to say of concern, but I think I started to say that there was a case, and I'm trying to find more of my notes on it, because it was a case where it was a case involving this was approved for publication. The other cases other than the Supreme Court case that I've been talking about were not. This is really something that we should all, if we're witnesses to something like this, should be of concern. Because what happens is under Title IX, in this case, a defendant appealed from finding of the family part judge that he abused or neglected a child within the meaning of the statute. And what he did, and the majority said that he violated the statute, which is NJSA 9:6-8.21 and et sec., by unreasonably allowing the infliction of excessive corporal punishment by the child's mother. And the appellate division actually affirmed the trial judge. There was one dissent. And what that means, this was heard on appeal before three judges, Simonelli, Guadagno, and Leone. And the majority, two of the judges, held that, in fact, this man was, in fact, the finding that he abused or neglected this child, they upheld that. And one of the concerns for anyone would be that any matter where someone would be accused of abuse or neglect, very, very serious. It can have serious repercussions if you're convicted for all kinds of employment, et cetera. So what happened is the New Jersey Division of Child Protection and Permanency, called the Division or DCPMP, relied on a number of things with respect to the injuries that this child sustained as a result of a beating by her mother. And the there was a referral from her school, and they went through the entire procedure. But the fact is that the man did not do anything. He was there, and in fact, what he did was take another child away, kind of told her, stop it, and then went into another room with the other child so the child would not witness it. And so this is the question. There's no question that the mother had abused and neglected. The question was whether or not he should be found guilty. And in this case, the mother, said that she was upset and frustrated, and she hit the child, blah, blah, blah. But the photographs confirmed, even 3 days after the beatings, that there were visible bruises on her, the child's cheeks, stomach, arms, thighs, back. And there were actually not only did this woman hit her, but she